Good evening. This is the Daily Drum for Wednesday, June 19th. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is a special edition of Insight as we honor the holiday known as Juneteenth. Now, we know that most of you have the day off, so sit back and relax for this focus on Juneteenth, an important part of American history. Joining us tonight is Steve Williams. He is the president of the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation. Mr. Williams, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Bramante, if you don't mind.
First, explain to our listeners the importance of acknowledging Juneteenth.
Juneteenth brings balance to the celebration of freedom. Not everyone was free on the 4th of July. It's not an either-or choice. So acknowledging Juneteenth and commemorating and celebrating Juneteenth is the first step, or one of the real first steps towards political and social healing in America.
You know, the conversation about the fight just to get the holiday has been had, but I think it's important to sort of step back and remind folks, right, how the push to have Juneteenth seen as a national holiday, how we got there, and who made it happen and who signed it into law.
Well, you know, one of the problems that we have as a people and society is not having complete information, right? So that's a problem that we have to deal with, just not as Black people, but as people in the world in general, and not just with Juneteenth, but everything in the world in general. Juneteenth has a history, it has a past like everything else. It wasn't always called Juneteenth, okay? It didn't just come out Juneteenth, right? It was Jubilee Day, right? You know, Jubilee Day was a while before the Portmayu, known as Juneteenth, and that's a part English language, but the Portmayu was brought about in about the 1877, 78 is when it got the kind of that name started to come out, right? And about 1879 was the first time it was proposed to be a holiday, both state and federal. Okay, so the fight is long. The modern fight really can be traced back to people acknowledging Juneteenth, such as Dr. King, Martin Luther King, and the Poor People's March. After that, it was organized to take place on Juneteenth because of the history. Then there was a Pastor Thomas out of Galveston who wanted to, you know, elevate Juneteenth both as a thing for America to rally behind, and also to bring the economics of Juneteenth into Galveston, right? And so he recruited a young man by the name of Al Edwards. Al put together a campaign and got Juneteenth passed as a holiday in Texas, right? So that was a good thing to get the holiday impacted. And while that happened, there was a man by the name of Dr. Alzo Reddick. Dr. Reddick was in school in Texas. He went back to Florida, where he then, in about 1990, made Juneteenth the state holiday in Florida, right? And right after that, there was a legislator by the name of Maxine Horner in Oklahoma, whose aide, Connie Johnson, wrote the findings, the reason why, the findings for the legislation in Oklahoma for it to be recognized and acknowledged there. That's the first three. We stop right there, right? Mac, Connie's with us, still with us today. Dr. Reddick's still with us today.
So has it become, Steve, what you hoped it would be today as we see it being celebrated?
Well, it has always been celebrated. That's the point. That's the problem here, okay, when it gets to commercial. We understand that this is America. From the Virginia Charter on, it started out to be about money and commercialization. That's the reason why they came here in the first place. Okay. But Juneteenth has always been celebrated. The largest Juneteenths have been in New York and in Oklahoma for the year, way larger than any of them in Texas, because the people who brought the message, who enforced the message of freedom, because the people in Galveston knew they were free already. They already knew they were free. Okay. So that was part of the battle that we're having. Yeah, they already knew they were free.
Okay. Okay. So look, there's a couple places I want to go here. One, the commercialization. But, you know, you just said something that's very important. Now, look, the general sense is that Juneteenth is celebrated because in Galveston and in those deeper areas of Texas, the narrative has been that slaves did not know that they were free because it was still Confederately controlled areas. And then those Union troops, Black Union troops, come into Galveston. I see you nodding your head, but just follow me. And then announce that, hey, wait a minute. You know, you guys have been free since January 1, 1863. What I hear you saying is, no, 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 no. They knew they were free. So help me with that. If they knew where they were free, why do we even have Jubilee or Juneteenth?
So let's roll back to Juneteenth 101 real quick.
Okay. Take us there.
Juneteenth 1. September 22nd is when the Emancipation Proclamation was issued by Abraham Lincoln. This was after several other events that include Frank Baker, Shepard Mallory, and James Malloy, who escaped to Fort Monroe. And then General Butler took these guys and confiscated them from the Confederate Army. And
right, that but the was Emancipation, the proclamation didn't go into effect until January 1st, 1863.
Right, 100 days later, this is what I'm trying to tell you.
Okay.
Butler confiscated the property. He confiscated the property from them. So when those Southerners came and want their slaves back, right?
Mm-hmm,
he said, no, we're confiscating your property. So according to common law, when you confiscate somebody's property in a certain means through a legislation, right, you have to give them 100 days notice. So that's what Lincoln did, the first Confiscation Act, the second Confiscation Act. You got to understand all this. Then the Emancipation Proclamation issue. We're confiscating your property in 100 days.
Okay.
Right? If you don't comply, if you don't come back into the Union. Mm-hmm. So that's essentially there. So that was to give everybody time to be notified.
Okay.
Everybody knew it was coming. That's why there was Watch Night. It wasn't like Watch Night wasn't in Galveston. It was there, right? It's just that the control, the force, there were even Union forces in Galveston, in the bay there, but there weren't enough of them, and they didn't have the spirit that these men had. Okay, these men who showed up in Galveston were on their way to Mexico. They were on their way to Mexico to stop Maximilian I from linking up with these Southerners. We knew we were free. They knew they were free. They just couldn't.
They couldn't.
They didn't have enough force. They didn't have enough force to be free, right?
Mm-hmm.
So here come these Black men from New York, Illinois, North Carolina. They're in Virginia. They leave from a place called City Point, right?
Mm-hmm.
These men are the ones that trapped General Lee at Appomattox. These Black men marched through the night, the day and the night, to trap General Lee at Appomattox. He just wouldn't surrender to them. We know they were there. We got the records, okay? Mm. He just went. So these guys had this spirit with them. They were the same ones that had the years and the time left on their contract, right? So when they heard, when General Grant hears about Maximilian coming to Texas, after he's already, you know, taken everything he could out of Mexico, because Mexico owed France money, and Napoleon said, get your money out of them, right? We've already taken Texas and everything else, right? And so, you know, Maximilian now is going to hook up with the crazy people in Texas. So Grant says, what can we do? The largest naval operation in history is what Juneteenth was at the time. It was a large naval operation. They had to move over 9,000 men from Virginia to the border of Texas and Mexico as a show of force to stop Maximilian. Along the way, they ran into a storm, not able to land anywhere close. They ended up pulling into Galveston for a couple of days to refuel and resupply. That was the Juneteenth spirit. Now, when you look at General Order Number 3, you'll see that we know that they picked up Granger in Mobile, Alabama. He wasn't with them there. Grant sent him because he was part of the Kentucky First. That's how we got Mitch McConnell on board, right? That's how we got him. Granger was there. He was from Kentucky. He's buried in Kentucky, right? Mm-hmm. He was married to a Harper, a famous family in Kentucky. That's what Mitch was like, okay, I'm good, right? They sent him to Mobile, Alabama. He got on the boat with them. They picked up all the orders. They have 5 orders, and General Order number 3 was one of them. And it's only a little strip. Let them know that all, by proclamation of the United States, all slaves are free. That's all General Order number 3 started out as, right? So along there, he picked up his other commanding officer, Emory, and they were headed towards the border. When they run into this storm, they have to resupply for a couple of days because they're out of fuel. They pull in, and some of the men hit the port to bivouac, spend the day, temporary camp out, get their land legs. That's when June 19th, 1865 took place. They're marching through the streets. White people are getting out the way. Here comes these brothers who are in the heart of Texas, who have fought through everything, but they managed to execute Juneteenth without firing a shot. It just happens. Emory looks at it, and Emory adds on the rest of General Order number 3 and signs it and posts it on the door of the colored church present day known as Reedy Chapel. The rest of the men go through and march through the city. When you talk to the BOI born on the island, when you talk to the people there, you know, my wife who's passed away, her daddy was born on Galveston Island, 1910. Okay. When you my family, you know, we went with,
so when you talk to when you talk to the folks in Galveston,
they tell you freedom came when the black men with guns came.
Gotcha.
Here 9,000 black men getting off the boat, right, with uniforms, spit shine, and rifles and guns marching through the street. That's a jubilous morning.
So fast forward, Steve, now to 2024, right? And you tell that story. And you correct some of the narrative, those little pieces maybe that, you know, folks don't get. And when I hear that and I hear you walking through like, okay, look, we've got to know some of these particulars of how it happened.
Right.
How then, number one, how important is it for you that say school kids, folks understand all of those particulars, and how do you get them to know that? Because history, you know, as they say, you know, how history is remembered depends on who tells it. So you telling it, right, it might be different from someone else telling it. So how do, as we celebrate Juneteenth, you make sure that those particulars are out there?
Well. So that's very interesting. And I have to really say this, God is great. Lieutenant Governor of Virginia, Winston Sears, said God troubled the waters and sent the men to Galveston, right? Winston Sears. She was at our last shove off day. And God is great because before, as we were making this march along the way, we happened to have a very good associate of ours, very good for associate. His name is Calvin Pearson. Do you know the name of Calvin Pearson?
I don't.
Calvin Pearson is Project 1619. Over 40 years, he studied and found out that his family was part of the original Africans who arrived in America on August 25th, 1619, not on a slave ship and not in chains, but on a pirate ship. There were two of them. And one of the pirates had a warrant for his, one of the captains had a warrant for his arrest. So he told everybody who was on his boat, including these Africans who had gotten off a ship that they raided and sunk. And they're like, well, we're not going to let you die. Get on the boat with us, right? And they head there. So that narrative, how we started out there, those Africans from Angola and how we got to 1705, is completely wrong. They got you in Jamestown in shackles and chains. That did happen, but that's not how it started, right? The whole process that went there, how it was hijacked by the media, okay, from Calvin, who is the expert on it, Rick Murphy, who's behind it with his story. It was something that we as a Juneteenth Nation got to watch through the legend, through their march through it. They went through it before us, and we saw how the 400-year commission ended up. They endorsed us, right? But we saw this whole process, and me being in the federal government, understanding the legislation parts as a contractor, a consultant, working at multiple federal agencies in IT, that's what I do, right? We were able to analyze our approach and what we were able to do and to negotiate with Congress where we're at right now. We're, as I tell young people, the federal holiday is like this. If you look at it, it has no findings. Why does not have any findings? It's because we use a technicality called zero findings. And that's because we didn't want to have to explain or fight or have to deal with any of the rules in the House that we have been dealing with for a long time. We just simply said, we don't have to say that because every single one of your 43 states have already acknowledged it. Okay. So you guys can jump up and down and yell and scream and complain. I didn't write the rules. We didn't write the rules. They're your rules. Okay. So that's how it comes down. So Juneteenth was not a give me. You'll see people who objected towards it, right? Objected about it. We have to be able to take and break things down and encapsulate them and show examples of the truth. And that is going to come through no matter whether you're in states that one like the southern part of America where Dr. Reddick is at in Florida, who want to take and do things kind of differently, right? Or if you're in a state that is, you know, wants to really be progressive like Colorado or California, we have to be, tell the whole story of truth. And we start with this one thing, Juneteenth. And we show them, and you look at General Order Number 3, you post it on your door, and you see it's actually two different pieces of paper, right? It's two different pieces of paper that were squeezed together, right? Two different pieces of paper. And you post it on the door. And anybody in the military knows he who signs the order, he who executes it. So you don't see Granger by issue of General Granger, but signed by F.W. Emory, Adjutant General, right? So that tells you that the media story that you get isn't lining up with the historic facts.
Why
so now
that,
you get a chance to remember.
Why is that, Steve? Is it too difficult? Is it too difficult to tell that story? Because you dropped a lot of information. I can hear our listeners taking it all in, but that's a lot. And so when it gets compressed,
that's a scratch.
Yeah. When it gets compressed, I would assume then things kind of get left out. Right. And so as we.
Well, no. It's about people's sensibilities. Juneteenth is about self-agency. And if you create a dialogue of self-agency and self-proficiency, that's going to go against the control mechanisms in place. Right. We have that. Can I take 2 minutes real quick?
Sure. Go right ahead. 2 minutes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We all know certain people in our history. We know who Crispus Attucks is. Right.
Mm-hmm.
We know who Nick Turner is. And we know who the Massachusetts 54th is. Mm-hmm. Right. By media. We know who they are. Right. Now, what happened to Crispus Attucks? He got killed. He was killed standing up for America. Okay, that's great. That's good. And I believe that me and my friend Rick Murphy are going to go back about this, right? But do you know who Lemuel Haynes is? Or Salem Poor? Or Peter Salem? You have no idea who these brothers are. Okay, Salem Poor stood up at the Battle of Bunker Hill, a Negro on loan to the Revolutionary Army, right? Stood up the Battle of Bunker Hill, shot the British commander in the head, directed the rest of them down the hill to charge the Britons and deal with Bunker Hill. 13 letters of commendation were written by officers to George Washington about this man. They said, we've never seen anything like it. He's a soldier beyond soldier, right? But you don't know his name. White people came from all over America to come shake his hand. He died as an old man of natural causes. Lemuel Haynes was the first black minister. Most people know him as that, but they don't know he was a hero of the Battle of Fort Ticonderoga. He kicked in the door and led their troops in, pow, pow, pow. They called him to pray over the Continental Congress when they issued the Declaration of Independence. 4 days later, he issued Liberty Further Extended and said, Thomas Jefferson, if you were living under Levitical law, we would stone you for your practices. He's the father of the Civil Rights, but we don't know who he is. Right. We know who Nate Turner is. Right. And we told Nate Turner, and Nate Turner led a great revolt, but he ended up hanging. But if I ask you, do you know who Juan Caballo is? John Horse. You would not know, because John Horse had the only successful slave revolution in America. His people never surrendered. He defeated America in the Second Seminole War, right? He drug them down to the swamp, him and Osceola. They drug the American army down into the swamp. And eventually they said, okay, if you stop killing white folks and burning down everything, we'll let you and the black folks be free. Then they moved to Oklahoma and America reneged on their word, right? So Horse went back to Oklahoma, Muskogee area. They saddled up, strapped up, and fought their way to Mexico, where they became the Muskogos, and they were free in 1850. They heard about the Juneteenth and been selling it in Mexico as long as we've been celebrating it. Okay, the Muskogos. As a matter of fact, they were another part of history. John Horse is one of the most magnificent features in American history.
I'm gonna have to do some more history then on Muskogee, because that's where my grandmother was born. I think I got people.
My family's from Rennesville, all black town of Rennesville. Okay, mm-hmm. where Bass Reeves used to go drink his moonshine after retired. Okay, so last thing is, we're going to go right there. Everybody knows about the Massachusetts 54th that ran out of Fort Wagner and got killed. But the day before, black men outnumbered more than 3-1 to Southerners, and the South won one of the most strategic battles at the Battle of Honey Springs, right down the road from Muskogee, the Battle of Honey Springs, right? And they were up against cannons and everything else, but these brothers won that day, the day before. The day before, they won the Kansas first, right? And they won that battle. The next day, Fort Wagner took place, and they got killed. So you see, there is a pattern here. So having self-agency is not part of the program, but it is becoming part of it through Juneteenth. And we let people know that Juneteenth wasn't about this guy who stood on top of an imaginary balcony and all the black people cheered. It was those people seeing us in uniform, representing America, defending America, saving the Union, and saving ourselves at the same time, right? Is what Juneteenth is about. Dr. Frank Smith, curator of African American Civil War Museum, we were in the middle of a heated debate, and Frank just summed it up like this. Great. Him and Dr. Myers were really good friends. He said, something special happened that day. God was in effect. That's why we're still discussing it today.
Well, you know, there is so much that you've just added here in this first 20 minutes, Steve, of history. And I think I'm a historian, but you're throwing things out that I am not even aware of, right? And it would seem to me, to your point, that is the broader purpose of Juneteenth, not just to talk about that date, June 19th, 1865, but so much around that before then and even after then. And I would think that's where the conversation is a jump off point with Juneteenth. And I think you're an exemplar of that in sort of what we're talking about. And there's so much more I want to get into, and we have time to get into more. I want to talk about, what's happening today in terms of social justice, in terms of social and civil rights, in terms of community activism, and using Juneteenth again as a jump off point. So hold tight, Steve.
Well, yeah,
we're going to get into that. Hold your thought, because we're going to jump into that. But I got to take a quick break. But don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. This conversation continues online and on SiriusXM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. The original Quiet Storm is next on 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on SiriusXM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is a special edition of the Insight segment. Tonight, our focus is on Juneteenth and all that is important around Juneteenth. We celebrate the holiday, but we're also celebrating American history and its focus on African-American history, because there's always the conversation, African-American history is American history. And joining us to be part of that conversation tonight is Steve Williams. He's the president of the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation. Steve, you were about to make a point when I was just saying about how Juneteenth is a jump off point to really talk about the past and the present in terms of American history, and how its foundation is so centered on African Americans?
Well, yes, it is. You know, one, I'm a musician also, okay? I've been privileged to play with a lot of great musicians. One of my favorite musicians of all time and thinkers is would be Gil Scott-Heron. Mm-hmm. And Gil Scott-Heron, in one of the songs called B-Movie, which we're redoing, he has a line. He says, he talks about what, first one wants freedom, then they all want freedom. Well, when you look at it chronologically, right, there was Juneteenth, and then there was civil rights, there was women's rights, there was gay rights, but it's all in the wake of Juneteenth. If you look at it chronologically, that's there. The success came with that spirit, with that day. And there's a lot with that spirit that came with it that's applicable today. Part of the things that we did when we were working with the Senate, we wrote several series of findings on why Juneteenth should be a holiday. And we threw a bit of information out to them. We told them that Black Wall Street is directly related to Juneteenth, right? We explained to them, we said, hey, listen, because of Juneteenth, particularly the Juneteenth in Oklahoma, here's where the rub comes, right? We acknowledge Juneteenth because that was America, in America. But America is its states and its territories, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The Treaty of 1866 freed the last people enslaved in the territory of Oklahoma. They were the last ones freed. So, June 14th, 1866.
So how come Juneteenth isn't 18? June 14th instead of June 19th. Some could argue that, but I don't want to take you off your point, but you know where I'm going, right?
Yeah, yes. But Juneteenth is a spirit. That's just the spirit of Juneteenth, the class, and that spirit carried through because it wouldn't have been at the same time. You mm-hmm. got to understand Juneteenth is something special about that day. You look, those Black men went to Texas, right? To stop Maximilian. Maximilian was executed on June 19th, 1867.
So we're still on that date, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The very first Father's Day in America was June 19th, 1910.
Okay. So June 19th has a date, but go back to Oklahoma where you were. I took you off your point about June 14th in Oklahoma and tying it.
Black Wall Street.
Yeah, Black Wall Street.
Yeah, Mac-America Wall Street. Yeah, well, one of the parts in the Treaty of 1866, which was stated that those people enslaved had no interest in the land. And so they provided them interest in the land, which means the ability to right to own land in the territory. They owned land in the territory where slavery was already outlawed, in the territory, and those people were in rebellion. It was issued on June 19th, 1862, that was when the first issue was for that. When we brought that to Congress's attention, they're like, you guys are digging. I was like, you came up with objections. We're going to have to find out. We're going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. That was our memo. Okay, that's what the Reverend Ronald V. Myers Sr., MD, left us with, Doc Myers, who took the Juneteenth to 43 states and the District of Columbia. So that's what we did. We went in and we dug, and I have a great, great, great education team. So yes, in Oklahoma, they gave them an interest in the land. They were able to plant and grow and build, and that attracted people like Edward P. McCabe, who established towns, encouraged other Black people to come. They were part of America, but not in America. So they were able to do things that they couldn't do in America. Thus, all those 89 Black towns working together, right, from Langston to Tulsa, all the way down to Greenwood, Archer and Pine, were able to work. And they accepted you, whether you were a freeman who was a Black person in Oklahoma who had never been enslaved, or if you were formerly enslaved and you were a freedman in Oklahoma, or you were enslaved in America and you showed up to Oklahoma, it didn't make any difference. We just all put it together and made it work, right?
So let's,
That's the true spirit of Oklahoma, of Juneteenth.
So let's get into today, Steve, and tell me about how you feel where we are in terms of race relations, in terms of progress for African Americans as we are celebrating Juneteenth. You know, that then becomes part of the discussion, not only the history, right, the past, but the present. and how you use Juneteenth, or how we should use Juneteenth to affect the present?
The first thing we need to use Juneteenth to affect the present is to use as a point of cooperation, right? To understand what the Juneteenth flag means, to understand that the star in the middle represents the guiding stars that we used to always go where we're at.
And the star around it doesn't represent Texas. Correct. It's not about Texas.
It can represent Texas. Yeah.
Okay.
It can represent Texas, right? And there's the bursting star of freedom that's around there, right? You see, it's into a new horizon. See that horizon that we're going into? We're going to a new horizon, but the ground is red, showing that our blood, the ancestors of our blood, soaked into the ground of America, all across from the middle cross to all the way up to
14th George. As David Walker said, right? He said, it's in the soil. Right.
It's in the soil. That's what the flag recommends. Just to make sure you don't forget, there's the date right there. I'm not good at this anymore. June 19th, 1865. Mm-hmm. Right, man. So as a rallying point, that's what the red, white, and blue means to us. If you go to At the Closed Gates of Justice, there's a poem written back in 1910. It will talk about that. Ben Haft had the foresight and the ability to visualize it, and the Reverend Dr. Ronald B. Myers took that vision and put it on his back and went across the country and pushed the flag. I was just fortunate to be recruited by Doc Myers to do that. So today we are in a position where people can accept that. We're not saying we have anything against a Pan-African, but we're American. We have equity in America. We have equity in America, right? And so I think race relations can be better, but people are human beings. Juneteenth is action. When you go down and you see what happened with Ahmaud Arbery's killers, right? That was us. That was, you know, Tatiana Cook working down there. You know, we now have on board with us, after working with us, Selwyn Jones, George Floyd's uncle. He's a good participant. He understands the Juneteenth message. He just came on as we were out working for other local things. We want to make sure that Juneteenth is about action. You go there. It's about having people not only register to vote, but actually understanding how to vote through a Juneteenth initiative, actually sign, checking the box and working the polls and being in the polls and collecting the vote, being part of the process. Hey, and then running for office. And if you don't like the left, and if you don't like the right, if you want to be in the middle, you can run as a Juneteenth candidate, right? That's what we want to, that's what you do. Hey, listen, most people on Capitol Hill are moderates. We hear from the extremes, and that's why we're messed up right now. And I like a lot of people on Capitol Hill, right? You don't get 417 congressmen and 100 senators, you know, by not by picking. You know where the middle's at, and that's where the balance is at. Like Juneteenth brings balance, right? So,
How would you gauge, Steve, how would you gauge the success of those initiatives that you just talked about in terms of getting folks registered to vote, getting folks to vote, getting folks to be engaged in terms of running for office? How do you measure that, whether or not your foundation has been successful in that?
We haven't, and we didn't start it. Listen, Bobby Seale, the Black Panther, is still alive. He's a good friend of mine. Like Lou Gossett Jr. was a very good friend of mine, and Jim Brown. They all came to, as we moved on and got traction, they were like, hey, they gave me issue. Bobby Seale's, that's what he was about, feeding people and getting us in political action, getting us voting, and Bobby's constantly. So it's not a new push with us. No, but we have something here in Juneteenth which can be a banner, a segue for us to let people really know that this is what counts. Our front lady, Miss Opal Lee, Dr. Opal Lee, she's from Fort Worth, Texas. Mm-hmm. Dr. Myers introduced me to Opal.
And she, would you say that she's the most well-known person associated with Juneteenth?
Yes, she would be the most well-known person. She's on our board of directors, mm-hmm. and she's in Fort Worth. And when Dr. Myers introduced me to her and said, Opal, I'm bringing Steve on. And Opal's like, okay. I said, where you live at? Opal, I live in Fort Worth. I said, well, do you know my uncle? She said, who's your uncle? I said, Bob Terrell. She said, oh, that's my best friend. I just left his house. My Uncle Bob was the city manager of Fort Worth. He, as a city manager, he leveraged that to make sure. That's the reason why when that trial was there, they wanted to change venue, because he said, you Black, you hear, don't care about the national. Be concerned about your local stuff. If you want something out of me, you better make sure everybody in your church is registered to vote, right? Mm-hmm. And you guys are engaged and involved. That's the most effective person I've seen to get it done was my Uncle Bob Terrell, right? Get it done in Fort Worth. Get it done. Get it done. We have to get it done. We have to get involved in the process. We just can't register in there. We have to go out and understand who the candidates are, at least locally, who your sheriff is, you know, who your mayor is, who your council people are. Get involved and do that, right? And if you don't like what goes on, create a block and move and get everybody out. Just the threat of that got people arrested in New Brunswick, Georgia. Just the threat of we're voting everybody out got the people arrested, right? That's how that happened. Mm-hmm. Right. You know, like, hey, listen, all that rest. No, we're voting everybody out.
Steve, is there still resistance to Juneteenth being celebrated as a holiday? And if so, why do you think that is? And if not, why?
There is some resistance by some people, some are even our own people, unfortunately, because they're not uneducated. So when you know better, you do better. Right. They're uneducated. I think, Juneteenth. There's a guy by the name of my namesake, Steve Wilms, Huntington, West Virginia, right? He made it a holiday in his town because Donald Trump said, I made Juneteenth famous. And he did amongst his people. And I thank him, right? You know, I worked for the Donald at Trump National Golf Course as a contractor, you know, so I understand the process.
How did he make it famous? Help me educate me on that. How did Donald
back when he wanted to bring his campaign to Black Wall Street during Juneteenth, right? He couldn't get the day right, right? He couldn't get the time right. So he went out and made a big ruckus about what was going on there. And, you know, a lot of people there are very aware of who the National Juneteenth is. They know who I am. They know who we are. We know what we do. They talked about it. And it got to be a big ruckus back in 2020, right? It was a big ruckus with him coming to Oklahoma and doing a whole bunch of stuff during Juneteenth. And, you know, he'd like to be boasted. I made Juneteenth famous, you know, what he did amongst his people, because most of them, you know, it was hard to read. We were getting phone calls like, is this the National Juneteenth? Where y'all at?
In a backhanded way. I got you. So why do you think within the Black community? Because I've heard some pushback on it. It's like, okay, you know, we don't want to water down the holidays, and we don't want to. Do we really want a holiday where we're celebrating where slavery is involved? I'm just taking a contrarian point of view, right? Heard that. What have you heard in terms of kind of the hesitancy of having Juneteenth as a celebratory day?
We know this, and one of the things last year, our motto was Juneteenth, the wave of freedom, because freedom came in a wave. Every state has a day when they got free, right? And they have their particular thing. It came in a wave, right? And we understand that as a wave, it arches and crescents and dips and dives, and it's not all at once. You know, as a kid, living off in the base of Miramar, I was a Black kid who surfed. You know, when they surfed, we all went to the beach and surfed, and you ride a wave. And if you want to get the perfect wave, you want to ride it off, walk off your board onto the beach. Our freedom came like that. You know, it started in Washington, D.C., and it kind of just started moving legislatively. And as the army moved across the country, and that crescent was Galveston. That crescent was Galveston. So whether it was May 8th in Mississippi, or November 1 in Maryland, or, you know, March 25th in South Carolina, we understand that they're all. We tell them, hey, listen, do your thing, do that, but bring it all together. That's one criticism that was about Juneteenth, thinking it was just about Texas. But it wasn't just never about Texas. Right? It was about those men who came from New York, who came from Ohio, who came from Mississippi and North Carolina. They took it back with them. Them veterans took the holiday back to them, right? So when they look at that and you say, here's another thing I'm going to hit you with, really. When they look at things like Black History Month, which was created by Dr. Robert Starling Pritchard, the first Black classically recorded pianist and a founding board member of the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation.
Not Carter G. Woodson?
No, he was long gone. And they know who Dr. Pritchard is in the Pan-American and Pan-African Institute. No, he created Black History Week.
Okay.
Black History Month came from Juneteenth, and Dr. Pritchard, celebration of Juneteenth, and his family growing up in upper state New York in Syracuse, which was for the longest, one of the longest Juneteenth that were around. Dr. Pritchard took that month and he applied it. He took that celebration of art and everything and applied it to February for several things. Number one, February 1st is when the 13th Amendment was signed, National Freedom Day, by the Richard Robert Wright Association. The Freedom Association is there. We're going to bring that back. That was one of the biggest hurdles to us getting a holiday, was National Freedom Day, besides the other things. But what?
Why was that a hurdle, Steve?
Why was that a hurdle?
Well, I think I heard you say that was a hurdle to get Juneteenth because of the February
1st. Yeah, because February 1st is National Freedom Day. Older than Black History Month, which Dr. Pritchard kicked off in New York in 1965, right? Mm-hmm. So, and I knew Dr. Pritchard, he passed away here in Manassas back in 2016. It was a hurdle because National Freedom Day kind of sounds like Juneteenth when you look at it, right? And we came up with the differentiator of that being, that's what you did legislatively. Juneteenth is what the people did actively. This is what the people did. It was us. It was our self-agency. So that's the great thing about Juneteenth. They're acknowledging the Congress's acknowledgement of our self-agency. And more senators and congressmen know the information that I'm telling you than people do. They know this. They sat down and talked with us. They know this. This was the arguments. This history that we're bringing about was what we used to contradict their objections. So they're aware of this history far more than most people think of. Those staffers and those senators, and those, they're aware of this history. They're aware of it. That's the reason why they went the way that they went.
Speaking of politicians, Joe Biden signed it into law, right, to make Juneteenth a national holiday. Some would have thought that the man he served under as vice president, President Obama, it would have been signed into law under him. Why did it come to President Obama? For folks who don't know, did he resist signing it into law? Is there a story behind that? Uh-oh.
Wow, Vermonte.
Uh-oh.
Yes, there's a story behind it. In Chicago, Barack Obama picked up the Juneteenth flag and was in the Juneteenth parades with Lustine Byers. As a matter of fact, he set up his campaign headquarters right on the same block as Juneteenth. He oftentimes called Doc Myers and called the Doc Myers house when he was going along and to get information from him. Yes, we would have thought that. But in the world of wanting to be squeaky clean, some people will put that above doing the right thing all the time. Dr. Myers was a man who didn't mind picking up a fight. And he was one of the people that brought attention. If you want to know when National, do you know when National Sickle Cell Day is?
I do not.
It's Juneteenth, brother.
Another Juneteenth. Okay.
It's on Juneteenth. We put it on Juneteenth working. But Dr. Myers did that, right? Dr. Myers was a medical doctor, a reverend, a medical doctor, and he was one of the first people to complain about opioid medicine and how it was opioid and pain medicine for the people. It cost him his medical license.
But I want to make sure, though.
Dr. Myers was the face. I was his right-hand man. It cost him his medical license, and because he was in trouble, it wasn't a good look for some people to step up. That's the best that I could say.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. So here we are now in 2024, Juneteenth. Where do you see the country now in terms of where we're moving in terms of racial justice, community activism, issues of equality, because that's going to be the conversation today, not that we shouldn't have it every day, right? But when you have a holiday like today, then that becomes a center of the conversation beyond what you've told us about the history of Juneteenth. I would assume it's important that this day is when folks are talking and taking action, as you've talked about. Where do you see us right now today in terms of justice and equality? Well, along racial lines.
Along racial lines, well, we have a long ways to go, but we've came a long ways. So it kind of, we have to acknowledge that we have come a long way and we have a ways to go, right? And there's a lot of people there, and a lot of that way to go is internal. It's like an internal self-development. Like if you're doing things and you want to get to a certain goal, you have to do some internal self-development. And that's how we are. Juneteenth is a key component amongst our people. Once they get understanding, it's new as far as being a federal holiday. It's new as far as it's taking shape. It's new as an infant as compared to even thing like the Passover Seder, which is very much symbol like parallel, you know, Juneteenth with that. So it's new and it's taking shape. But what we do tell people is that amongst all the things that you do, really understand what is going on with and why this day it is. And that is by looking at the Emancipation Proclamation, right? And understanding what it is and where it serves. By looking at the 13th Amendment, putting it together, and looking at General Order Number 3, putting it together, you can see that. See, if the Emancipation Proclamation freed anybody, we wouldn't have needed the 13th Amendment. The Emancipation Proclamation freed nobody. It just sounds good, had a rhyme, and when people feel like it did something. But it didn't free anybody. It was just a confiscation of property and allowed black men to pick up guns and fight.
Yeah, and it was a military document too, right? It was a way.
Right. Yes, it was. It was a military document, and that's what it was played for. So the 13th Amendment freed us, right? And mm-hmm. that whole process, so you get there. But then when you look at General Order Number 3, the congregation of families and idle work and work, all that came from those previous two documents, right? It all came from there and how it was put together. So that's one of the key things we have to do amongst ourselves. It started at that point. And once you start there and start to get the story and it unfolds for you, that's as we blossom, America blossom. I have to quote, I gave a quote from Dr. Myers earlier today, said, hey, man, the 4th of July freed the land, Juneteenth freed the people, right? Mm. It would take mankind to save mankind, Lou Gossett Jr. Lou would tell me that all the time. It takes mankind to save mankind. That's why there's a Sermon on the Mount. Right, your Heavenly Father is there, but how you act and work with each other is how that's going to take place, right? What's going to go on. And that's what we have to do, how we treat each other, right? Our biggest thing is working with each other cooperatively and, quite frankly, stopping the violence in our community. Mm. Those are the things that we're looking for. We can't achieve economic parity if we don't cooperate and we don't stop the violence in our community. You know, we can't get to what we need is economic parity. We can be socially aware, educationally aware. We can do all this. But until young black men realize that the solution to the problem is not at the trigger, right? Mm-hmm. Until we say, hey, you ain't S. If you kill another black man, we can't get nowhere.
Can all you right? use Juneteenth, Steve, to have that conversation? Are there programs out there in communities now during Juneteenth? I know it's a celebratory day as well, but in terms of having programs, having conversations, having community groups to address these critical issues that are in the black community, are you seeing that? And can your foundation, and is it making those things happen?
We are working with different programs across the country with different people, because everybody, we have Juneteenth people everywhere, part of the foundation. We're working on a program to get there. But what we really need to do is in the message. And in the message is where it's going to be at. And the message is going to have to come through the thing that gets to our people most. And that's going to be in the music. Doc used to always tell me, like several other people, lead with the music. And that's in the music that is going to have to come there. We can't glorify that type of behavior. We have to condemn it completely, make it completely socially unacceptable for us, right? It can't be. We can't, not only are we killing off the cream of our crop, right? And it being killed, because you want to control population. I live in Northern Virginia. Right. You know, when we get deer in Loudoun County, when they get the deer too many, they send the hunters out. And who the hunters kill? They look for the young bucks, because that's how they're going to control the population. All right. All right, people, wake up, because innocent bystanders are getting killed. Right. Innocent bystanders. You're not trained. And this is not nothing new, because I'm from Los Angeles and I was living in L.A. in the late 80s and the early 90s. Brother. Let me tell you, okay.
I know where you're going. Yeah.
Okay. let me tell you. All right. So yeah, I mean, you know, I would leave from Woody's and roll down Crenshaw, man, because it was a safe zone. I never even hit the drive-throughs if you drove a nice car, because we were just stupid all around, you know, and you had to keep your head on the swivel all the time. You know, you got people untrained out with weapons, doing crazy stuff, innocent bystanders all the time. And it never solves any problems. It never does. It doesn't. So I would tell them, if any of them are there and you got a dispute where you feel like you got to strap up and go roll on somebody, find you an OG in your neighborhood, tell them what's going on and bring them to the table. All right. Do that first. Please do that first.
You talked a little earlier, very early in the conversation. I think you used the term commercialization. Is that happening with Juneteenth, number one? And is that okay? And are corporations becoming involved in Juneteenth? Do they want to be involved with Juneteenth? So it's a two-part question, but they kind of meld together, the commercialization and whether or not you're seeing corporations sort of jumping on the Juneteenth bandwagon, for lack of a better word, or not jumping on.
Vermonte, how much time we got?
We got about 6-7 minutes.
Okay, I'll take two. Listen,
okay, you can take three.
America was founded on commercialization, right? And yes, they have. Everybody saw the ice cream fiasco with the flag on. The flag is copywritten. I called up John Fern, head of Walmart USA, and said, copyright.
Now, you're talking about the Juneteenth flag, for folks who can't see
it. The Juneteenth flag, yeah. It's okay. The Juneteenth flag. It's copywritten. And they had an image of that on the ice cream in Walmart, right? And I'm like, hey, man, you know, the copyright infringement. So that was a break. Every story stopped. Just those words right there. You know, it doesn't mean anything to Mr. Bezos, apparently, because he just lets people go on Amazon and do whatever they want to, right? If you want a Juneteenth flag, go to JuneteenthNation.com and get a flag, not Amazon. So there's commercialization. And what we've asked for in each one of these cases is not just for them to write us a check. Strangely, we ask for respect. You know, why you say, why, if you tell us you're not going to do this and it still happened, what's wrong with you? What's going on here? Can we sit down and talk about it, right? Can we sit down and talk about this and figure out why before you write us a check? Because, you know, we just don't want a check and then go on about saying back to status quo. We want you to examine yourself and the reason why you would impose and depend upon these things, right? And so it started out as a good conversation, but as we try to bring people together at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum up in Baltimore, you know, a good place, you know, Reggie's place, there's a good place to do it. Everybody got shaky. You know, we wanted accountability, credibility. So that's the part that we about Juneteenth, right? In corporate America, we want accountability, but we want everybody to play by the rules and to do the right thing. So yes, corporations are getting there. Corporations are beginning to understand. 75% of America does not know what Juneteenth is, doesn't know it's there, and doesn't know what it's about. So we have a lot of work ahead of ourselves, Vermonte.
So corporations then can help get that message out, can help in terms of folks finding out what Juneteenth is. It doesn't have to be a bad thing. Is that what I'm hearing?
That's exactly. It's not, Juneteenth is not either or, right? It's not either or. celebrate the 4th of July or celebrate Juneteenth. No, it's a celebration of both. It adds balance. It brings it there. You know, we're not saying we're against America, you know, although we do believe in God, family, country, right? We're not there, but we're here. We have equity in America. We have equity in America. Look at the ground. It's red. That's equity in America, okay? So everybody should fly that. Like I tell everybody, I don't care if you, everything should, you know, fly the Juneteenth flag. If you are women's suffrage, fly the Juneteenth flag because we led the way. If you're on the gay, you know, fly the Juneteenth flag. Fly the Juneteenth flag at least one day because we're there. And let people know that it's all about freedom. It's the balance, the celebration balance of freedom, right? And that's where you get healed. Is by acknowledgement. We can't sweep stuff out the rug. As Chuck Schumer said, not running away from it, but staring it straight in the face, okay? It's not the end-all solution to the sign of the legislation, but it is a humongous step forward. It's not about a man. It's not about a month. It's not about a thing. It is about a specific certain amount of people who were enslaved in America when they found out they were free, when they were able to celebrate their freedom, they were they did it exuberantly. You know, that's what it's about.
MLK, for many folks, I think, would say today, the MLK holiday, folks look at it as it's a national holiday, but it's kind of a black holiday. Juneteenth, mm-hmm. national holiday, black holiday. Do you see it as a black holiday? And is that problematic that many folks see it as a black holiday, even though it's a national holiday?
It's problematic because it's a day about us, but not for us. It's for America. I grew up in Denver, Colorado, and back in the 70s in Denver, it was very segregated city, right? Very segregated. Most people don't know that. By the 70s, it was very segregated. And the government came in and demanded busing, integration in Denver. And people fussed and fight. There was a guy by the name of Daddy Bruce Randolph, who was a local legend and barbecue man, owned restaurants all over town. He used to give away turkeys, but turkeys in November in Denver, not very sociable atmosphere. Daddy Bruce actually, you know, was from the Arkansas-Oklahoma border area. And he decided to start doing Juneteenth big in Denver, right? You know, my family already knows. And he started doing it 5 points and worked his way out. And pretty soon was in City Park, and everybody was coming to City Park to get free music and food. You know, people like Philip Bailey and Al McKay are from Denver, Earth, Wind & Fire. They're from Denver, Colorado. You know, a lot of musicians are there. Pamela Greer, Don Cheadle, they're all from Denver, Park Hill. All of them went there, right? And so that led to people getting to know each other and working with each other. Right. So much so that when they decided to put a Martin Luther King Street in Denver, most of the black community and white community together said, man, Daddy Bruce Randolph was the person in Denver. So they made Daddy Bruce Randolph a street. Right. You know, so Juneteenth was never solely about black people.
Well, and I like your line, Steve, when you said, and correct me if I'm wrong, what did you say? It's a holiday about us. Repeat that, what you said, but not to.
It's a holiday about us, but not for us.
But not for us. And I want to wrap on that because I think that's so succinct, but it really tells the story of Juneteenth, at least in the holiday, right? And folks like you get to tell more of the story, those parts that people don't know about. And so I so appreciate you expounding on so much to educate people about Juneteenth and what it means and who was involved and how we got to this point. And hopefully folks will go to your foundation, get more information, become more active, vote, right? Run for office. Steve, if folks want to know more about you and or the foundation, how can they do that? Where can they go? Is there a website?
Yeah, you can find out more about us. We have a couple of websites, national-juneteenth.org. And if you're in DC, go to dcjuneteenth.org and find out about us and what we're doing.
He is Steve Williams. He is president of the National Juneteenth Observance Foundation. Steve, again, thank you so much for being with us and sharing all of your knowledge on this holiday and the history of it.
Fermonte, it is such a pleasure to you, and we have a saying, all things Juneteenth.
All right. That's the Daily Jump for this Wednesday, June 19th. I'm Bramante Bright in for Harold Fisher.